actively put forth a candidate for the spot. They've just got so many others that they can't, you know, they're not, it's not a high priority for them. And so one possible solution, if you decided to keep the board, is to change the way that people are put onto the board. It doesn't have to go through the governor's office. In fact, there is precedent for boards that were having similar difficulties to repeal the statute where the appointment process is laid out, and instead make it where, you know, you're appointed by, where you don't have to go through that formal channel. And then that way people can come on faster and get going. And then I absolutely agree with Al's assessment that the real power of these groups is in the subgroups where you can tackle specific topics, but if you don't have the critical mass to have those subgroups, then I think you do get kind of caught in these meetings where you're listening and going through the minutes, but not maybe moving forward in key areas that you want to. So being able to address the critical mass issue of getting more people on, both in identifying them and then actually getting them to an official spot, I think would be the issue if you keep the board.
This is Catherine Guzman. May I say something? Is that possible?
Yeah, go ahead, Catherine.
I was just thinking, you know, I'm hearing a lot of information, and I think we're all nodding at, you know, all this stuff sounds reasonable. But what I'm trying to understand is how we all came to be in these positions. I know, for my part, my son's PBI brought it up. Would you like to, you know, be part of the board? Would you like to, you know, help? There were, being the parent rep, I was told that there were lots of parents that could technically do it, but they were all very overwhelmed in dealing with the situation at home. And so they thought that I might be able to help because I had a better understanding of things having grown up with my brother. What I'm wondering is how we found, so that's how I was sort of found, and I volunteered. How did we go about finding everybody else, you know? Because maybe we can do that and help bring people in to volunteer in that way. Does that make sense?
With respect to appointments, it's been my experience that legislators and governors are reluctant to give up any of their appointing authority, but there are many informal channels that we can pursue to get people to the attention of the appointing authorities. For example, if you know a legislator, you can mention it to them, and they can get you to, or point you to, the appointing authority that is in their caucus. For example, if you have a Republican state rep, they can point you to the minority leader who has appointing authority, and then you can persuade them that you would do a good job on the board. Because if you look at the formal channels for getting appointed, it's quite onerous. It's the same as applying for state employment, which is quite a process in and of itself. So the formal channels appear to discourage the appointment of people by setting up these barriers. I mean, I understand why the barrier would be high, because you want people who are motivated. And one way to get them motivated is to give them barriers to overcome. But there are informal means of reaching appointing authorities that we can take advantage of. As an example, and if you don't mind my saying this, Phil, you have done precisely that with securing your appointment to the State Rehab Council, and I stand to be corrected on that, but it seems to me that you have a relationship with a legislator, and you were able to persuade them that you were a fit for the State Rehab Council. In the past, I know that when Brian was director, he was active in recruiting people to the State Rehab Council, because another feature of the State Rehab Council is that it has term limits. So that means you have to constantly recruit new people to the council, and the council has a fixed number of members. And the name council, by the way, incidentally, it implies an advisory capacity. So we see many ways in which we have duplication of effort with both, and there is nothing that limits the State Rehab Council to taking a more active role in the active role that it does in the community. That BESBY advisory board really so far has not, with several notable exceptions, of course, but generally over the last several years, what we have seen appears to me to be a retreat from the community.
Al, this is Carol.
Yeah, go ahead, Carol.
A couple of things. So Jen was talking about the kind of the duplication, the redundancy of reports and things, and I don't know if everyone is aware that I have 5 boards that I give updates and reports to. So the Deafblind Advisory Council is state mandated, state statute mandated, and then I have the State Rehab Council, which is federally mandated, the elected committee from the Business Enterprise Program, which is federally mandated, and then I have, this advisory board, which is state, and then there's also BCAG, and Eileen, I'm sorry, I'm probably going to get all the letters wrong, but it's the Board of the Consumer Advisory Council, something like that. And so they only meet 3 times a year.
Yeah, it's the I'm sorry. I can't even think what we stand for anymore.
Yeah, so I always call it, it's BCAC. And they meet 3 times a year, but the others are quarterly. And so the months that these 5 meetings happen, I do generally give the same report 5 times. And it does take a lot of not just my time, but the other staff time for some of the program updates and things. And as far as recruiting, I don't know Brian. I don't know what he did, but I focus on the SRC because there are very strict federal mandates and regulations of term limits and what groups are required to be present on the SRC. I don't have time nor the staff capacity to help recruit for 4 other boards, besides the SRC. So I just wanted to make those couple of points so that way everybody is aware.
Oh, go ahead, Mary.
I don't know. In today's world, it is very difficult to motivate people to volunteer to perform these tasks and fill these positions. I see it in Rotary, where I am, with service organizations. People in their prime working years don't want to become involved because they're already way overtaxed. I see it in lots of other areas. And yet, as the whether it's for-profit or non-profit, everything has become more intense, more just increased the work, the everything. And I know people are trying to manage that and downsizing, whether seems to be one of the possible solutions. I'm not sure that it is the best one. I think as a group, and again, I'm not assigning blame to anyone, because I think we're all, if we had to do that, we'd probably all share in the guilt along the way. But sometimes, because we've let go of things for so long as a group, we've let the whole thing, our mission and our purpose, get away from us. And when we talk about the low attendance rate, that's a symptom of it. People have just, I think we've got a lot of good people, myself included, who have been on one of these commissions for a long time. And maybe it's time to clean house a little bit and do some heavy duty recruiting it does work, it is possible, and I think it is worth the time and energy for a short period of time to recruit and rebuild, get new blood, new people with some new purpose who are willing to commit. I know that it's going to be, if we do that, it would be very difficult, but it can work. I think there's a, as you said, it's become a lackadaisical attitude, like, well, everything is just going to keep going, it'll be fine. But no, I think we've come to a crossroads. Downside, or establish a really working, committed group, put this off. Those seem to be our two choices. And it really depends. Where do the people in today in this room feel best we should go? Should we continue with this voice, or do you want to give up this voice in favor of one of the other committees? And Carol, I do understand your point about reporting very similar to five different commissions, and I understand the level of commitment for a federally accountable board. But I think we should all really carefully consider what we would be losing if we do dissolve this committee.
With regard to the administrative burden, I'll get you in a minute, Chris. It's not a trivial matter when these five boards were conceived of and put into statute and regulation. BSBY was a 120 person agency. Right now BSBY has about 80 people working for it. That's a staff reduction of a third, and there hasn't been a corresponding reduction in the number of boards and commissions to which Carol has to report. But the burden of being director has increased significantly in just the last 10 years or so, without a change to the number of reports that have to be made, meetings that Carol has to attend. And I think that has to weigh in our decision making here about whether to consolidate and let the State Rehab Council take on, while it really has a lot of the same functions, and to the extent that our functions diverge, there are means by which these matters can be brought to the State Rehab Council's attention. You can connect anything to Voc Rehab within reason. So there, it's not as if we're eliminating all opportunity for the community to have its say in advising BSBY. But I think what we have to recognize is that times have changed. And that includes the amount of staff and the amount that is asked of staff. We should put the same demands on ourselves as has been put on staff. So I think that is one of the reasons we need to seriously consider whether the advisory board needs to continue. Chris?
I'm sorry, Al. Yeah, I didn't have my hand.
Okay.
It was Phil.
Oh, I'm sorry. Phil, go ahead, please.
Hi, I have to jump on a leave, actually. That was for a meeting in 20 minutes, so I just want to make some comments. Just want to correct, I was appointed by the governor's office as a recommendation from Brian Sigmund. The SRC right now, I think we're finally up to spec with respect to membership. Our minimum staffing or membership is 18, but we can have a maximum of 25. So we do have the capacity to put on members from either this board or another board who are willing to work on work groups specific to those issues. You know, I'm concerned about the federal mandate of the SRC being Voc Rehab related. However, as you just put it, things could be, quote unquote, construed as being VR related. I don't know if that's kosher or not, but that certainly could be something to do if we have people to work in those work groups for, say, adult services or youth services. It's often difficult finding volunteers now to serve on work groups. And although our bylaws encourage it, it does not mandate participation in work groups. So I'd be willing to have more discussions about this. I'm not sure with respect to the advisory board when you lost your authority, because I recall in the past that certain plans or goals or assessments were voted on by the advisory board, such as, you know, the reducing the adjustment to blindness training from 9 months down to a fraction of that. So I don't know when that changed, when you guys lost your authority to vote on these things. I know the SRC is required. We provide annual reports, and we provide the needs assessment survey with that, and the consumer satisfaction survey, submit a plan, three-year plan for the VR program with the participation of, you know, Carol and Mary and our work group. So a little bit different way of getting things done. We have specific members, not just appointed by different people as the advisory board does, but representing different stakeholders within the VR program. So a little bit different there, but of course some similarities. When I attended the advisory board meeting two meetings ago, I was very surprised to hear such detailed reports from BEP and from Supervisor Burgard about the VR program, both of those items, and something that we had never been fortunate to receive during the SRC meetings I've been a part of the last 3 years. So yeah, a lot of the things you guys heard were related to VR. I didn't hear much anything about youth services or adult services, so I think more discussion is needed.
Thanks, Phil. And you know, I just now that you mentioned that, I think I'd confused your appointment adventure with my own to the Public Transportation Council, because what I had
I'll be joining you there soon.
Yeah, that was my situation. Well, I got in touch with the chair of the CPTC through my, I'm also on the Bike and Ped Advisory Board, and one of the members said, hey, you know, we're the Connecticut Public Transportation Council is recruiting members, why don't you get in touch with Jim Gilday? And I did, and he got in touch with the legislator, and I was appointed. So you see, these things can move very quickly. I mean, this all happened within the space of a couple of weeks. So there's nothing to prevent the same thing from happening with, you know, the advisory board or the state rehab council.
Yeah, you just need active membership. You know, I believe that anyone serving on a council or commission or board is there to work and not just listen to minutes and go on to the next meeting and approve minutes. It needs to be more than that. And likewise, yeah, I was contacted by Tom Scanlon in the governor's office if I was interested in joining the Public Transportation Council. So I'll be doing that as well. So I look forward to serving with you.
Oh, we'd love to have you. So also I want to add that the State Rehab Council has very powerful tools in terms of both the standing committees and the reports it is obligated to produce. Those things obviously require work and they require attention. And those are elements that are missing from the advisory board. We don't have standing committees. We don't have the obligation to produce a report. And, you know, with those things being lost, it becomes the redundancy of the advisory board. It just becomes more salient.
And Alan?
Steve, go ahead.
Can we have some comments from the public?
Sure. Any members of the public wish to speak? Phil, you want to say anything else before you have to leave?
I don't have anything that comes to mind. I would answer if you have anyone has any questions with respect to the SRC and any involvement in the future with somehow working as or with the advisory board.
Great, thanks, Phil. We appreciate that. Andrea?
Okay, I'm sorry, I've been muted. I've been trying to check it. I have a thought about the redundancy of reports, and it's always bothered me for BSBY staff that they've had to come to all these meetings and give these reports, and by and large, there aren't a lot of questions generated by those reports, and I've often wondered why, since those reports are clearly available after the fact, in a readable version, as members of any one of these committees and boards, why is it not an option that, for at least the vast majority of them, we're not presented those reports in via email and have a chance to read them prior to the meetings? Why do these? Why does someone have, like Carol, have to be at five meetings? That seems ridiculous to me, and an unwise use of everybody's time. Not that we don't like having people there, but you know, there may be a requirement for her to be at certain meetings, but for meetings that there's not some sort of requirement for her to attend, it seems like that report could be presented either by the chairperson or simply, you know, circulated ahead of time like the minutes are, and any questions could be either submitted to her directly or through the chairperson or something like that. But that seems like a much more efficient way to do this, regardless of what happens with this board, just in general. And I don't mean just for Carol, I mean for all the heads of the departments.
This is Eileen. Yes, I think there are definitely ways to more efficiently use Carol's and everybody else's time.
This is I thought we've done that. I thought we had gotten a couple of our meetings had information sent out from people ahead of time for us to read. I thought we tried that a couple times, and I actually thought it worked well. Am I misremembering?
It's been my experience that generally with boards and commissions that when people make presentations, questions arise that may not from something that's sent to you by email ahead of time. It has also been my experience that a lot of members of boards and commissions simply don't have the time to read what comes to them ahead of time, and they rely on presentations to keep themselves informed. So when we take the presentation part away, we miss quite a bit. And then it's just, you know, what is it then? It's a gathering of members of the board who talk among themselves and ask questions or not of staff members. So this is a way of getting both staff members and board members engaged in the moment.
This is Andrew. Well, we can't have our cake and eat it too. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I mean, we're talking out of both sides of our mouth here, because we're talking about possibly making ourselves obsolete, and a huge part of that is the time drain on BSBY staff. And a possible solution, at least one possible solution to one of the problems we're facing, is to find a solution to the time drain. You know, maybe it's a rotating thing. We do each, you know, we have four meetings a year, so we get a different department head for each meeting or something. Anyway, I think thinking outside of the box, if we're going to stay as an agent, as a board, which maybe we're not, but if we are, I think that, like Mary has said, with changing up recruitment, and I think thinking outside the box and really understanding what we are and really having a heart-to-heart with ourselves about what we want and what we want to be and how we look going forward is what needs to happen. But I think outside of the box thinking is what needs to happen to make us be desirable to BSBY, to the agency, and to anyone who we're trying to recruit.
So you've just articulated, Andrea, the reasons we are having this meeting.
Right.
It's because we have to make a decision. It's not about making ourselves obsolete. It's about deciding whether we have been rendered obsolete by time and circumstances.
Right.
Hi, may I jump in? This is Michaela Zito from the Usher Syndrome Coalition,
Michaela, sure,
member
absolutely.
Of the public.
Yeah.
Hi, I know I haven't had the opportunity to meet most of you, but for, you know, those that I have, I was brought on by Stephen Tall. I've been working with him for the past few months in my capacity as the ambassador for the state of Connecticut. And I, beforehand, one of my goals as an ambassador is to be aware of the different organizations or committees in the state that service not only the visually impaired, but the deafblind community, and then also for the deaf and hard of hearing community. And Stephen was gracious enough to, you know, let me know about these meetings. And granted, I'm new to the role, but I just wanted to, you know, jump in and say, because a lot of this conversation has been focused on, you know, are we obsolete? Do we need to recruit new members? And just speaking from my perspective, that's relatively new to this community, is I think there would be a lot of individuals out there where you can get that younger, fresher blood. And I believe Mary brought up, you know, what was done previously with the library, where there were existing members that stayed on while the recruitment was being done of new members. So there was that carryover. And then older members that maybe, you know, had served 20, 30 years on the board that were looking to reduce their time or their commitments, you know, they were given that guidance to the new members, and the new members had a chance to come in and bring new ideas to the table. And, you know, talking about, you know, looking outside of the, thinking outside of the box, I think if you bring in those new individuals, that would, you know, really lend itself to furthering that idea along, because the majority of us would be coming in and not, you know, having an idea of what was done 20, 30 years ago, or even 5 years ago, and could maybe look at things a little bit differently. I don't have any of the answers, but I just wanted to say that I have been really appreciative of this group, and it's put me in contact with some really fantastic individuals across the state that have really benefited me personally, as well as me in my role to benefit others in the deafblind community. So I would be upset if this advisory board were to, you know, distinguish it, you know, go away, but I am interested in, you know, being part of something moving forward if that is a decision that the group makes.
Thanks, Michaela. Any other comments?
Philip?
Yeah.
One more time before I jump off. I just want to mention, looking through the documents I was sent with respect to this meeting, your bylaws and some of the things, is it true that your bylaws only require one annual meeting a year, but you
That's
choose
my statute.
To meet quarterly? Interesting. Yeah, it said one.
The statute only requires one meeting a year, but we have a tradition of having met quarterly. And you can meet any time at the call of the chair. Or if two members decide that they would like to have a meeting, they bring it to the chair, and then we call a meeting. But yes, the application is only for one meeting.
This is Eileen.
Oh, hold on, Eileen. I want to let Phil finish because he has to leave. So go ahead, Phil. Sorry, Eileen.
I don't know how many work group meetings you have or additional special meetings throughout the year, because I know for this past year, I think I was on 15, 18 meetings, those including work groups, of course. So we get work done when we have, you know, the meetings to get the work done. So I don't know what you're doing if throughout the year that is helpful to the cause, or as someone mentioned, are you just there listening to reports each month, which is great to catch things that may need the attention. But I've never had someone from the advisory board contact me, and I'm in my second term as chair of the SRSP, say, hey, can you look into this for us? Or, hey, that doesn't sound right, or can we get some help with this, or more information about that? So the board's not working collaboratively, I think, is an issue as well. And I'll leave it at that. But thank you for the work you've done.
Thanks very much, Phil. I see that there are three of us on camera. Could I ask the board members to please put themselves on camera?
Can't do it. I'm calling in by phone.
No, so we're not calling in by phone, obviously, but I don't, you know, I like to see people, which is another point I'd like to bring up. In-person meetings. I think it's time to resume in-person meeting, and, you know, the option to be hybrid, I think, is great. I like the idea of being able to participate remotely, particularly for the public, because a lot of people don't have the opportunity to just show up if they have to go somewhere. As we know, transportation is the number one issue that prevents us from achieving a lot of our, well, it doesn't prevent us, but it stands in the way of our achieving a lot of our goals and eats up a lot of our time as people who are legally blind. So this option has been something of a godsend, if you will. But the pandemic is receding, and we have treatments for the coronavirus, and the obligation to quarantine with regard to the coronavirus has diminished significantly, and a lot of organizations are now gathering in person, and I think it's something that the boards and commission in general should consider. With that, having said that, I'd like to see if we have any more comments with regard to our